Thursday Night Football with John Giles.
Johnny Giles is a national treasure. When he speaks, I mean, I'm like, yes, yes, yes. When he's on the show, I was in the car the other day. I parked the car and I sprinted into the house and turned on the radio. I love listening to him. I love Johnny Giles.
John Giles, every Thursday at 7:30 p.m. on OTB Sports Radio, live 24/7 on the Go Loud app. The OTB Podcast Network with Virgin Media. Catch all of the UEFA Champions League and Europa League games live on Virgin Media TV.
OTB AM. This is OTB Sports Radio.
Now, from somewhere hot and sunny, I'm delighted to say we're joined by Ireland and Fulham defender Cyrus Christie. Cyrus, I can tell from that blue sky that life is pretty good wherever you are in the world right now.
It's nice here. It's nice and peaceful, relaxing. So it's a good way to recover for the new season.
And recover from the last season, because it was one of the wildest seasons that anybody is ever going to have. For it to end for you guys in extra time in the playoff final and for it to end victoriously is exactly how you want a roller coaster to finish, right?
Yeah, no, I mean, 100%. I think we kind of always knew that it was going to be the playoffs. I think at one point it was, you know, it looked like Leeds and West Brom probably got too far ahead of us, and then we managed to pull it back, and, you know, the impossible nearly became possible. And then we'd already had our mind set on the playoffs, so we knew, but we still had that hope that we could take the automatics. And, you know, once we were into the playoffs, you know, we were super confident that we could perform. And, you know, we've got big players in our team that have that experience of going through the playoffs from before, so we knew that we could do well. And we went in there with full of confidence, and I think we showed it in our performances. I understand that maybe Cardiff second leg, I think we had everyone a bit worried, but you know, I thought we was always in control of that game. I mean, they bombarded us with set pieces and throwing, but other than that, they weren't troubling us from open play. And, you know, they're a dangerous team, Cardiff, and you know, we managed to get the job done in the first leg, really.
In the final itself, when the match is ticking into the end of normal time and getting into extra time, what's that level of tension actually like? Because it is the most talked about one-off game, and it goes around the world about the value of the match to both teams. How aware are you of that, and just how tense is the occasion?
Yeah, I mean, it is a super, super tense occasion. I mean, probably makes it a bit different, obviously, with there being no fans, but you know, as the game goes on and every kind of half chance, you know, I think people are obviously a lot nervous, especially when you're sitting in the stand. It's a completely different game to obviously when you're on the pitch. But, you know, the clock's ticking by and you're looking at it thinking, when's this going to end? And, you know, like I said, I believe we were the strongest team throughout in that game. And, you know, we played the best game, and I wouldn't say they had many clear-cut chances, really. You know, we performed really well. Our tactics were spot on, and like I said, we went into the game super confident. We were quiet, we were humble, and you know, and I believe Brentford done a lot of talking within the press leading up to the game, and you know, I think that kind of gave us the extra edge as well, where we used that as added motivation. Not like we actually needed any, but like I said, we were confident, and we knew that we were prepared properly, and we'd done the job right, and we knew that the occasion was there for us. And like I said, we've got big players that love big occasions. And you know, we rose to that. And Joe Bryan was the main man and the hero for that game, which was fantastic for him, because he's, you know, he's a wonderful player and he's a fantastic guy. And, you know, he's probably come under a bit of criticism, a bit of stick for probably no reason really at all. But, you know, for him to get that occasion and take that moment, you know, it was fantastic to see.
Yeah, he did incredible. Like, again, kind of Roy the Rover stuff from his perspective. It's mad that you're talking, though, about how something as small as the opposition talking about you guys. I didn't even see that they'd said any stuff. Was this, like, we all got to watch The Last Dance and Michael Jordan talking about how the greatest athlete of all time, in many ways, still needed the impetus of somebody giving out about him, even if it was true or not true. And here, like with the biggest game in world football, in terms of the money on the line, that little bit of extra motivation helps you guys. It's mad, isn't it?
Yeah, definitely. I mean, for us building up, a lot of us were watching The Last Dance and we were playing clips. And, you know, we obviously, our manager, that is something that he could relate to is in terms of the psychological aspect and stuff like that. So, yeah, I mean, for us, it was added motivation. You know, we picked up on it straight away and a lot of people were telling us about it. And, you know, they obviously said that we would fear them because they've won the two previous games. And, you know, a lot of us within that, in the Fulham setup, you know, I've been in games where, for example, we played Hull in the playoffs, you know, I think it was, we'd scored maybe 6-7 goals past them and they hadn't conceded against us in the season. And then we go into the first leg of the playoff, they beat us 3-0. So anything can happen when it comes to the playoffs and, you know, in a one-off game. And, you know, like we said, they done a lot of talking and it was the added motivation for us. But at the end of the day, we knew the biggest prize that was on the line. And, you know, we knew that we could go down in the history books, say, at Fulham, you know, with another promotion. And, you know, there was the added incentive for a lot of the lads. But, you know, the main goal was to get back to the Premier League. And we knew that it was going to be such a tough season because, you know, we're coming down as potentially the big dogs. We've obviously haven't spent so much money in the Premier League last time and we were the big fish that people really wanted to beat. And, you know, it's always a lot tougher and I think people don't actually understand how tough it is sometimes in them situations because teams really do come and they up their game. You know, you see them one week and, you know, they haven't been great against a team maybe that was in and around them in the same position, but they come to us and, you know, they turn it on and that's the same for us when you go and play the likes of the Man City's and the big teams in one-off games in the cup games, it's the same. So, yeah, you know, for us to get over the line and win it in, I think, in fantastic style. And, you know, they always do say Wembley probably is the best one to do it for is the playoff final. But, you know, it's great when you get there, but I'm sure it's not great for the heart.
No, absolutely. Come here, are you going to be a better player this time than you were the last time in the Premier League? How different will you be, do you think, from having the experience and just being that little bit older?
Yeah, I mean, you know, experience is key, I think, as well. And this, I always talk about is them moments where, you know, as a footballer, not everything goes your way. You know, we went up into the Premier League with hoping that we were going to achieve something and not get relegated, you know, with the team that we had and assembled, and it just didn't quite work out. You know, a lot of the team changed around. No one really had the consistency to play each game all the time, and it kept changing around. But for me, I think it is a massive factor if you can play week in, week out and get that confidence. And, you know, I think in that year, a lot of players, including myself, we didn't get the run of games. And, you know, I came from Middlesbrough coming into Fulham team that had obviously, they were winning every week. So, you know, it wasn't really like I had loads of games and then I got up to the Premier League and you're hoping that you play a game. And then I feel like I had a good game. And then I was out the next game for 3 games. And, you know, as a footballer, momentum is key. And, you know, like I said, this time, I think everyone's going back with maybe a point to prove. And, you know, I said it this year, obviously, when we got relegated as well. And from a personal point of view, obviously, you want to come back in and you want to prove yourself and you want to rectify the season before. And, you know, it's took me a while to even get a run of games. And even now, it's 2 or 3 games and you're out for 1 or 2 and because of the tactical changes. And, you know, it's so tough. And if you look at the other teams where they get a lot of players are playing regularly and that's obviously got to be the aim. And, you know, with the lads going in there now, we have Premier League experience and I'm sure they're going to bring in a couple more that with Premier League experience. And I'm sure this time around, it's going to be a lot different. If you look at our team and the way that we were able to grind results out and we showed a different kind of resiliency compared to last night.
Are you checking your phone to see the updates and like really hoping some big names come, but just not at right back or full back?
Aha, listen, that's football. I'm sure they'll probably want to bring in another right back. You know, you see certain things, and I'm sure that's what the fans probably want as well. And you know, I mean, you know, I'm sure they're gonna look at every position to bring in more because it's gonna be such a long season. We're gonna need a big squad. And like I said, for me, it's just, you know, I'd like to be obviously given a chance because, you know, I feel since I've been at Fulham, I haven't been given the fairest of chance to prove myself week in, week out. I've not really had a massive run of games on the bounce. I know I played maybe 30 games this season or whatever, but that was in stages. It wasn't regular games. And obviously that's tough to take when I've come from teams where I've played week in, week out. And, You know, I haven't been able to prove myself to the full capability of while I've been at Fulham, but you know, I've showed it this season what I'm capable of when I was given the run of games, and you know, I check everything, and you know, I know that I had a great win ratio when I played, and the points per game, and more goals that we scored. So you know, all that goes in my favour. But at the end of the day, it's what the manager chooses and what he picks, and you know, I need to go out there and prove myself every training session, and that's what it's about as a footballer. So yeah, I mean, we'll be looking forward to next season, and you know, like I said, I've not really been looking at the news to see who we've been signed and who we've been linked with. I think we need a bit of a break from football, because it's been so intense, and it's not long till we're back. So you know, I've just got to make the most with my family and friends, and see what the future holds.
No, fair enough. Absolutely, and completely well deserved after such a weird situation in the season as well. That must have taken a toll mentally too. I did want to ask about Stephen Kenny, name checked yourself and John Egan at one stage when he was asked about defenders who were playing well. And you know, obviously it's a new Ireland and a new era as well. So that's something else that if things go well over the next couple of months, it's going to be an incredibly exciting period of time where there is a new manager who comes in and who really wants to play football and really likes his defenders to take responsibility in terms of passing the ball and being creative forces. What's that like when, you know, I mean, obviously you're a grown man, you don't need someone to tell you that you're playing well, but it must help when the new manager comes in and you're one of the first names that he checks.
Yeah, I mean, for me, that was obviously, it was great to hear and great to read, considering... I don't think Mick McCarthy ever said a word to me of obviously when he come in, and you know, I went from playing quite a lot of games under Martin O'Neill. I think I played in pretty much most of them towards the back end, and then I come in, and you know, he obviously, Mick didn't really say anything to me. I came for, I caught one game, I can't remember who it was against, and you know, and then never played another game. So you know, I think even anyone in your stage, it's always good to just hear a different perspective from anyone, from certain manager maybe, or a coach, or whatever it might be, regardless of your age or not. There's always someone that has a different point of perspective and an opinion on what you could be doing right and what you could be doing wrong. So yeah, obviously, you know, I think most of the lads have probably spoke to Stephen Kenny now, and I spoke to him, and you know, obviously he spoke about his plans and different things like that, and you know, he seems like a great guy. And yeah, like he highlighted, I've been playing well, and like I said, I felt like I came back from before lockdown. It was obviously quite annoying. I thought I was playing actually really well, and then obviously the pandemic hit and got put into lockdown, and you know, I came with a mindset that, you know, I wanted to get back into the Ireland setup, and I want to always play for my country. And you know, there's never a time where I've never not wanted to. And you know, like I said, I was, when Mick called me up that time, I wasn't even in the provisional squad, and he rang me on the Friday evening and asked if I could fly out on the Sunday, and you know, no hesitation, I come out. And that's a standpoint. We've got so many fantastic players now, and it's great. And I wanted to just, you know, I want to keep performing well, and hopefully I can prove that in the Premier League this season and be given a chance. And it's exciting times for the Irish national team, I believe, because it's, I think someone mentioned it earlier, 20-something players that will be in the Premier League next season. So we're going to have a good squad, and there's some good young players coming through. So it's fantastic times ahead.
And fingers crossed the games come thick and fast and we end up qualifying for European Championships, which is going to be held a couple of games in Dublin. It could be sensational.
Yeah, that'll be obviously fantastic if, you know, we can make it. And I'm sure we've been there before, so you know, we'd love to get there again. And if you're playing in such a big competition in front of your home fans, it will definitely give us the added boost. I mean, even in France, it felt like we were playing at home. There were so many fans there. It was just such a joyous occasion, and you know, I'm sure the lads want to relive that.
Cyrus, I did want to talk to you about the issue of racism in football as well, because you know, there was a horrific incident where you were racially abused by people who claimed to be Ireland fans after one of the games, I think the Denmark game. And recently we've seen this issue come to the fore again. As somebody who has experienced this over a long period of time, are you in any way hopeful that what's happening at the moment has enough honesty about the conversation that we might make some progress on the fundamental issues of systemic racism which exist in our society?
Yeah, I mean, obviously, I've already touched on it. You know, I think there's a lot of systematic racism throughout every industry. And, you know, I always believe it's hard to speak upon because people don't really understand unless they're in that position. And, you know, you touch back on Ireland games, for example. If you look at that, and I always said it to Darren, I always said to Thingy, you know, it wasn't just a Denmark game, you know, in the previous 2 months, obviously it was October and September when we had the other international games, you know, it kept happening after every game. I was getting racial abuse. I wasn't obviously saying and picking up on it. Well, I picked up on it, sorry, but I wasn't telling people about it. You know, it's just, it's what it is. Carrying on, obviously, the Denmark one. It wasn't me that brought it up. It was James McLean, you know, and then, you know, I think that happens a lot. And I always said it to Darren and different stuff. It's funny that, you know, Cyrus, you're not Irish, but are you born in England or whatever it might be? But I don't see the likes of Richard Keogh, or I didn't see the likes of Harry Ott. I didn't see the other lads that Kieran Clarke or whoever it might have been that were born in England. No one was saying that same stuff to them. But me, David McGoldrick, Callum Robinson, the three black lads, it's coming at us that same way. We're the ones that are getting spoke about like that. And, you know, that's just one little minor issue, but people won't realise that because they're not in our position. So, yeah, I mean, it was numerous occasions that it happened. And then obviously, you know, I had to be the unfortunate one that scored the own goal. I didn't mean to, you know, it hit my trailer leg when I went to go block it. And, you know, that is what it is. And then I've took the blame for that. And to be honest, I didn't even know I scored an own goal at that point. I actually thought it already gone in, but until obviously I seen after. And, you know, it's one of them. Like I said, I'm used to it and used to it happening. It happened in the previous four games leading up to that. It happened when I first joined up as well. It started, you know, I mean, it even happened one time at the training ground from fans that were standing outside there. Obviously, they were kids. Do you know what I mean? So it's one of them. It happens. There's a lot of systematic racism. And you know, until people of all different cultures realise that, especially white people, because it doesn't really happen to them. And, you know, until they pick up and it realises, and like I said, I think their voice is always bigger than everyone else's. And if James McLean hadn't said it, I don't think people would have took as much notice. And it's always you're blaming it on a bad performance, or it's because you scored an own goal. It was never because of that. Like I said, it wasn't me that brought it up. You know, I took it on the chin and moved on, and James McLean brought it up, and his voice in Ireland and is probably a lot bigger than mine. And he understands the situation because he gets quite a lot of racial abuse as well, which no one ever speaks about and picks up on. And yeah, people might say, oh, maybe he brings it on himself. But I'm not sure he does. He's being standing up for what he believes in, his experiences. And that's always the case, is when you bring up your experiences and what's happened, people never want to believe you. And then it causes all sorts of, like James, for example, no one knows the history behind it. You know, I'm sure if you sat down and spoke to him on the history as to why he's maybe not done certain things, people will then realise that certain situations have affected the way his belief. So, yeah, it's crazy. It's one of them. I'm sure at the minute, a lot of people are speaking on it. It's probably gone a bit quiet now because obviously it's not such as a hot topic at the minute. And, you know, it's just a matter of time before people need to keep the momentum going and keep speaking up on it and make a change.
Can I just go back to something that you said there? There was an incident at the training ground. Was this at an Ireland training ground? So it would have been in Dublin, probably.
Yeah, this was in Dublin. This was one of my first couple of times when I was obviously new in. Yeah, it was just, we obviously people outside. Obviously, after training, we signed the staff. There's people there, and obviously someone they come up to me and was kind of, they just basically obviously, yeah, it was something racist or whatever they said, and it was a bit shock. And then obviously the other lads refused to sign some of the stuff because there was a few of the others were there and had seen it. And it was just, I was in shock, but it was just because I didn't expect it at that time. I was thinking, oh, we're at the training ground, whatever. Yeah, and it was just one of them. It's one of those situations. It, you know, it's like I said, it's not the first time. I'm sure it's not going to be the last. And yeah, I think it's when people catch you by surprise is when it's the worst. But like I said, I've had it so many times. It's just you come accustomed to it and you're used to it. But you have to speak up. If you don't speak up, then people don't understand and they won't realise actually what is going on in this world. And, you know, we can't stay silent. And that's for everyone, not just people from black origin. It's people from all types of races and multicultural backgrounds. And, and white people as well. So everyone needs to do their part and speak up, and I'm sure we can make a change. And I think the generation of kids coming out understand that, and, you know, and they've already showed it, really. So it's just a matter of like I said, keeping that momentum going to make a change.
The momentum is really important. We saw Danny Rose talk about racial profiling recently, and we saw Don Butler talk about being racially profiled, and both of them kind of like having that experience and having to go through that experience and having to talk about that experience is, I imagine, quite wearing. Like, there you are, hopefully having a brilliant experience with your peers in international football, and sorry, did you say it was a kid or was it a teenager or?
I was a kid, yeah. That's why it shocked me. It's come from a kid, so as much you don't want to blame the kid, so it's obviously coming from the parents, in my mind anyway. I mean, you may think different, but from a kid saying that. And then what shocked me the most is that obviously he's there with the teacher. The teacher didn't say nothing. She allowed it. And it was just like, unless you educate these people, then it's just going to keep happening. And, you know, it's one of them. That's what I find scary. You know, I always think to myself, like, you know, you have older generations and, you know, they're so stubborn that they're not going to change their mind, because, you know, if you've been on this earth for 50, 60 years, you know, it's hard to change someone's opinion. But, you know, you've got the kids that understand that what is going on in this world, and, you know, they're able and open to see what's happened. They're growing up in a different time now, and that shouldn't be the case. You know, they're open to so much education, Google and books and libraries, whatever it might be. So, you know, and then for a teacher who's in a high position, who's meant to be a carer, they're meant to be, obviously, maybe say non-biased, I don't know if that's the right kind of phrase to maybe say. So, you know, for her to not say anything was what shocked me even more. So, you know, it's just, I don't know what's being said around him at home or the education that he's had. And, you know, it was one of them, it's a kid, right? I'm sure he's got enough longevity in his life to understand where he went wrong there. And obviously, you know, hopefully 20 years from now, he still doesn't have the same opinion.
I know. And like, how much confidence can any of us have that that child is going to be led on the right pathway to have some kind of understanding or awakening that what he's doing is fundamentally wrong, and it's horrible. And it's really horrible that you've gone through an experience like that. But it does seem from what you're saying that you've kind of, you've experienced this so much with your coming over to Ireland and playing for Ireland, that like it should just be this great thing where you're playing international football and getting to, you know, lean back on a team and a support network and a group of peers and the supporters who are 100% behind you, because like that's generally what international football is like. And I would say that the majority of Irish football fans are like that. But if we don't actually step in and correct that kid or explain to that teacher why that's not acceptable, then we're not doing our bit as football fans, as broadcasters, as journalists, as Irish citizens. I mean, yeah. Like, I specifically remember after the Denmark game, there was an incident. Do you feel like we deal with these incidents properly when they are highlighted? Because, you know, it doesn't feel like we've kind of always responded properly when these incidents are highlighted and spoken about.
No, at that time, I don't think the incident was dealt with accordingly. The same way the previous four trips, when it happened after every game, it didn't get dealt with accordingly. It was put out there for people to see, but people just turned a blind eye to it. And so it's in that case, I mean, you demo one. It was there for everyone to see. I mean, there was obviously a massive reaction, but, you know, like I said, the reaction wouldn't have been the same if I'd come out and said it. It was James McLean that actually come out and said it. By the time he had actually said it, I'd already forgot about it. So, you know, but the thing is, I had seen it on that present day, and my friends had seen it as well. So it was already picked up on, and then there was people liking it and retweeting it and all the different comments. They could see it, but no one wants to pull the issue up on the guy. And the weirdest thing was is his profile was there for everyone to see. And then obviously when the guard had come in and supposedly said they were going to deal with it, absolutely done nothing, you know. So that's where you give up. And I've spoken to it so many times with so many people. I can understand why people don't say anything, because it never gets dealt with from any association, to whoever it may be, the police, whatever it might be, they don't do enough. They don't even, they come to a certain point where, because it's more high profile, they look like they want to do something, and but it's more to, I think, to benefit themselves. So they don't look bad, but then behind the scenes, they're really and truly, how much are they actually doing? That is the question. And I mean, there's so many incidents that happen, and the toughest thing is proving it. Even if it did happen as well, or how do they prove it? And I understand that it's tough because it's so-and-so's word, but when it's, if that's face-to-face, but then when you're seeing it on Twitter and different social media platforms, it's there for everyone to see, and Twitter have the whole freedom of speech where law, where it comes under. And I mean, I understand everyone's got a freedom of speech, but to what extent is your freedom of speech to just spit racial hate at people? And I understand that everyone has their opinion, but that's when you're, you know, making petitions for people to get lynched. I mean, you know, that's a threat on your life. And, you know, like I said, the guard that really didn't understand where I was coming from, they didn't do anything about it. You know, I don't know. I don't know what they expected. And even when I sat down and spoke to them, they didn't understand when I was explaining different stories about growing up. And they said, oh, yeah, well, I just don't believe someone in Ireland could be racist. And, I mean, you're going to get racial people everywhere. I mean, I'm not trying to say the whole country was racist, but you have everything there that you need, the evidence, what people were saying. I believed it was enough for them to do something. But, you know, I come away from, actually, we ended up ending the meeting early because I just knew that they wouldn't do anything. And then when someone from my family actually rang to find out what was going on, they said, we actually don't have a case. We don't even have a department to deal with this. So, you know, you're fighting a losing battle there, really. And I can see why people don't ever try and pursue anything. And that's either, I think that's why you don't see many cases where people get held accountable for their actions.
Did a guard say to you in a meeting, I don't believe people in Ireland can be racist?
Yeah, even they didn't understand them. You know, yeah, that's what they said to me. But then I thought, you know what, let me just give them a story of what happened when I was younger. Yeah, I mean, I can understand it, but, you know, I just can't ever see someone in Ireland being racist. So I was like, yeah. And then I'd done another one, and it was like three different stories, and they just still gave me the same answer. But the craziest thing was, the police officer pulled the guy up on his phone. He found him straight away. So, for me, I just don't understand how you can pull it up in front of us, but then 2, 3, 4, 5 months down the line, and then a year later, you get a message saying, oh, case is closed, but they haven't actually even tried to do anything when they have the evidence there. So, yeah, I don't understand, and that's the main reason I think people don't pursue different stuff. And for me personally, anyway, there's been so many occasions where I could have pursued it, and they bother, but it gets to the point where you have to maybe just keep speaking up, because, like I said, it's going to be a reoccurring cycle.
Well, that's the thing. Look, I think everybody in Ireland now understands exactly just how difficult it is for people of colour to live in this country, and how difficult it has been recently. And in the aftermath of the murder of George Floyd, there was a long national conversation that was had about this, where the stories of racism that people had suffered began to surface and began to be told. But that takes a toll as well. Like, we're asking people of colour to educate people in Ireland by revealing very hurtful details about stuff that must be incredibly frustrating. So it's almost like we're asking you to take responsibility for educating the people who are racially abusing it. That doesn't seem fair either.
Yeah, no, it's not fair at all. And I mean, it's a tough one, because obviously I wouldn't say I'm fully educated on it. Like, I can only go off my experiences, because when you're growing up, you don't actually learn about the different systematic oppression growing up, as, you know, you learn about the certain things in history, class or whatever, but none of it is anything to do with Black history. You don't learn about all the different kind of stuff that has happened. And that's why I think the education bit is so key for people. And, you know, I think that has to be looked into and changed, as for the kids growing up, you know, they need to learn about that kind of stuff. And even for myself, I have to go and do my own education to learn about that kind of stuff. And I'm seeing stuff every day, people reposting things like, oh, wow, that's interesting. You know, I would have never knew that if someone else didn't post it, you know. So, yeah, I think, like we said, I think education definitely is key. And until we can change people's mind and open their mind up as to what is going on. And, you know, it shouldn't take something like George Floyd to happen, but that is what it takes for people to actually wake up and listen, because if it doesn't harm them personally and they don't feel a sense of emotion towards it, then, you know, that's why people turn a blind eye and they don't speak, because it doesn't affect them personally. So that's always the toughest thing is, so, you know, it's easy coasting then otherwise. But yeah, I think education is key, and, you know, it's where do we go from here now? And, you know, it's like I said, like I touched on earlier, you know, I don't want to repeat myself, but it's keeping that momentum going and still educating people to realize what has gone on previously and how it's still kind of going on now, but just in a different manner.
No, I think that's 100% correct. And there's just two quick things that I wanted to mention. Because when the Mail, I think, had the original story about the lack of Garda response, we'd emailed the Gardaí, and they told us that the first suspect was a juvenile at the time of the offence, and he was deemed suitable for inclusion in the Garda Youth Diversion Scheme, which has apparently taken place. And then they also said that a full investigation file was submitted to the Director of Public Prosecutions in relation to the second culprit, who was in their mid-20s, and a direction of no prosecution was received, which means that the case gets dropped, essentially. Now, we were able to find that out by asking formal questions to their press office, but it doesn't sound like the liaison with you, who were the victim of these, and I use the word victim advisedly, were actually given the same access to the information, and the follow through isn't there. So there's clearly a breakdown in that process. The last thing, the power of the players kneeling before matches, the first time it happened was this, like, okay, this, there's a real chance now something might happen. We need to make sure that the momentum isn't just a badge and a pre-match ritual, because that could very quickly just become like pre-match handshakes. It's like, does anybody actually pay any attention to pre-match handshakes anymore? This was like a big thing to make. So something proper has to happen, and something meaningful has to happen. And maybe it's the captains of the teams in the Premier League who actually can be leaders on this. And again, we're asking footballers to be leaders in society in a way that maybe they haven't been prepared for all their life, and actually it should be the politicians, but ultimately they're not going to do anything. So it's a very difficult quandary you guys find yourselves in.
Oh, 100%. I think in a time like this, I think people have actually realised how much footballers actually do in terms of outside of football and in terms of this kind of stuff, whether, you know, you look at Rashford for what he done for kids that needed their school meals. And, you know, I think he made Boris Johnson do a U-turn on it, you know. So, you know, the power of the voices is there for footballers, because ultimately I think a lot of people do look up to us as role models, and we have to take that responsibility. But, you know, I'm going to say there's a lot of footballers out there that do a lot of stuff that people don't know about, and, you know, and the politicians, I believe, have to do more. They have to, but it's, you look at the politicians, and a lot of them are upper class, middle class, whatever they might have been. So they have no relation to someone that's coming from a poor background. They don't understand the struggle and the things that they've had to go through, because, you know, ultimately they've come up on a nicer lifestyle, and they don't understand the struggle and what people have been through. And I believe that's a lot in most cases, in most industries, you know, at the higher end of the spectrum, you know, there's no one there that you can look up to and think, you know what, they've come from where I've come from, they've made it, they understand what I'm going through. And I think if there's people around that people know and understand what these young kids may be going through, or not even just young kids, that people that are maybe in their 40s, 50s that are struggling and, you know, struggling to put meals on their table, they don't have the money, and they understand that someone in a certain industry has come from the same background that they've come through. There's just that tiny bit of a relationship there. And that's what I believe, you know. And I think because I play football, if you look at footballers and when you're coming through, you look up to certain players and the role models. But then when you get to a certain level of the game, you're realising the PFA and the FA they and stuff like that. Like, who there can I relate to? They haven't come through the same struggle that we went through as young kids, and there's no one there that, I mean, I don't, to be honest, I couldn't tell you who's in the PFA or the FA, but like I said, the issues at hand doesn't really affect them because they were brought up on middle class, upper class privilege in that sense. So that's, I think, is the toughest part. And I think people, they need to stop putting people in them positions and, or even just around them, surrounding themselves with people that understand the need for the people that have got the problems, really, and yeah, that they can relate to them, will definitely help a lot.
That's a very practical, easy thing to do straight away, is to diversify all of those boards and diversify all of those staffs. So actually every lived experience, particularly in the PFA, so every lived experience is represented and people understand exactly what the trials and difficulties of young footballers are.
Yeah, 100%. I mean, there's not much diversity in some of these industries, and, you know, it's, that's what everyone is talking about right now. But, you know, it wouldn't go. I mean, I'm sure there's plenty of ex-players out there, or not even, they don't even have to be an ex-player, that's someone that reasonably understands what is going on and what is needed in this world, so that they could go out there and find. But, you know, I'm not sure. Well, you'd like to think that would change at some point, but, you know, it's not going to change overnight. I mean, how much is going to change within the next year? I'm sure there's going to be a tiny bit of change, but it's just, like we said, it's just going to have to take it month by month, year by year. And you know, it's at some point, maybe I believe not much is going to change too much between now, maybe my end of my career. But, you know, you'd like to think there'd be been some sort of change. And, you know, it's just us as people. How can we affect the world that we live in and make it a better place?
Well, we can all do our bit. I hope you're wrong about the speed of change. I hope that the moment that's happening globally, where people are genuinely trying to look at themselves and check their privilege and go, well, actually, what could I do? I hope that we take this opportunity, because the pandemic is a big opportunity for us to hit a reset button and try and bring some fairness to life. And I hope it's not too traumatic talking about it. Like, I really, you know, it's difficult to ask you to talk about it, and it's not fair to ask you to talk about it, but like, I think everybody who hears the story of a child abusing you at Ireland training is going to be shocked, and also not shocked that it happened. That's the worst part, is that like, we can visualize it, we can see it, we can hear it in our heads, we know that this stuff is going on. But I think by bringing it out into the light, we at least begin to make everybody go, hang on a second, this is nonsense, this should not be happening. So I'll let you get back to the nice blue skies, and hopefully your holiday, the rest of your holiday is great. Sorry, we're all behind you. Like, the Ireland football fans are 100% behind you, really.
No worries. Thank you. Cheers. Thanks for having me. Take easy.
OTB AM. This is OTB Sports Radio.
The OTB Podcast Network with Virgin Media. Catch all of the UEFA Champions League and Europa League games live on Virgin Media TV.